Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Voicing Art, a podcast amplifying creativity from the Arabic-speaking world, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. Contemporary Middle Eastern art has always and continues to play a significant part in shaping the global art scene. And yet, in global art discourse, many of the questions, conversations, and speculations have left some of the most significant emerging voices unheard. That's why this podcast centres around the importance of voicing art. My name is Emily.
And my name is Tilda, and we have been lucky enough to interview artists and creatives whose work challenges perspectives on identity, power, memory, and more. Together, we'll explore a range of voices covering everything from Palestinian textiles to Iraqi art festivals and Egyptian graphic design. So join us as we listen.
In this first episode of season two, we'll be talking with Karim Fouad, founder of Mugassem, a project attempting to preserve Cairo's cultural aesthetics and fading urban landscape through a digital archive of 3D scans.
Mugassem in Arabic means three-dimensional. It's a figure or an object or space with any given width, height, and depth. And it's also derived from gism, which means body or figure. And so that word branches out into so many different meanings, and it always goes back to scale and depth in relation to the human figure.
If you ran into Karim working on the streets of Cairo, it would be a strange sight. A young man bent over, photographing a chair or a street food cart or a small coffee stand from all angles, obsessively capturing every single detail of these daily sights that most of us would walk past, without ever noticing. And if you stopped to ask Karim what he was doing, you might hear a few different answers.
It's a bit strange for people to see. As a result, it strikes up some very interesting conversations and also allows me to, build these different personas or alter egos for myself. You know, I could say I'm studying food carts, or I'm studying doors, or I'm studying chairs, you know. So it's really interesting, and it strikes up some really interesting conversations. And, you know, some people can be from that neighborhood and can give you tips on, you know, places to see, or, you know, it's always interesting to get this kind of insight from a local from that neighborhood.
But Karim's reality is far more interesting than the studies of his alter egos. He's the founder of Mugassem, a project creating a digital archive of Cairo through 3D scanning. He scans everyday objects, creating detailed virtual models of spaces, buildings, and things. Karim joins us from his office on a busy Friday afternoon in Cairo, where he works as an architect alongside his artistic practice. He spent 6 years studying in London before moving back to Egypt in 2022. And he tells us that the Mugassem project
kicked off in 2022, but the idea itself began in around 2019 when I was in my final year studying in London. And my project was looking into how architecture can act as an envelope to decolonize the profession of Egyptology through community building in the Nile Delta. That was my introduction to photogrammetry and 3D scanning, because I learned a lot about archaeology and the process of how you document these excavations and how you use photogrammetry to go on and restore certain objects or artifacts. So I thought it was really fascinating. And I was really trying to find a lot of 3D models of specific archaeological locations and sites in the Nile Delta, but it was really, really hard, and it was just impossible to find these like site-specific 3D models. So it took me a lot of time to kind of find one or two site-specific models. And when I did that, I reached out to the person that owns these models, and he was super cooperative, and he was an Egyptian guy who worked for the Ministry of Antiquities. And we established kind of like a virtual friendship, and we exchanged these models with me. And I just really liked the idea of creating this knowledge exchange of, you know, tangible or intangible objects, and then using them for, you know, for architecture rather than archaeology. Fast forward 2 years, and I wanted to bring this idea of a 3D archive or library for Cairo's architecture and heritage and, you know, day-to-day objects. So yeah, I mean, it was also a response or a feeling of urgency or panic, because after I moved back, there's been this increase of demolitions and, you know, kind of this urban development happening in Cairo, and it came at the cost of, you know, really, really interesting neighborhoods and architecture, and just like, you know, the whole urban fabric was just being torn apart. So this feeling of like inevitable erasure fueled me to kind of just going on walks and reconnect with Cairo again as someone who hasn't lived here permanently for, you know, 6 years or more, but at a slower pace, like trying to just look at the city in fragments rather than looking at, you know, whole neighborhoods and so on. So just looking at smaller elements basically of these things and just honing in on them. So yeah, I mean, I wanted to take time to observe all of these fragments that make up a building, and then kind of understand how that building fits into the context of the neighborhood or the city. And then I found that photogrammetry was like a really great way to document. Photogrammetry is basically 3D scanning without the scanner, without the 3D scanner itself. And in a way, it's much more accessible to people because you can just use a professional camera, or you can use an app on your phone. You can use that to take as many pictures or videos of the object or the space that you want to scan. And it produces basically a three-dimensional model on your screen. And then you can use it for so many different things. There are things that I scanned that are around 1,000 images. So yeah, I mean, you end up with the 3D model, but you just have to process it on a software first that kind of like takes all of these images as a batch and processes it through a series of like they're called point clouds, and then these point clouds turn into a mesh, and that's like the final result.
The subjects that Kareem chooses to scan are scenes that many of us would walk past without a second thought, but Kareem sees things differently.
There's a lot of pages on Instagram that are dedicated to documenting, you know, pieces of the city, like chairs, doors, or you know, architectural facades or fragments, Islamic patterns, and even as bizarre as like trash that you find on the side of the street or stickers on cars. And I think it creates this really interesting, wholesome, and also a new perspective on what it means to archive a city. Honestly, it's also a source of inspiration for me, because you see all of these different fragments of the city that you either take for granted on a daily basis or things that you just never really come across. So I think it's just a fantastic way of archiving. And so if we add 3D documentation to what is already a great body of work and archive of Cairo, we can then build more knowledge of our surroundings and also be able to use these models to reinterpret our relationship to the city. And imagine that it's kind of like an extra layer to archiving something through image and text, basically.
And while archiving is, of course, in many ways a very serious undertaking, Magassum also shows how experimenting with play can be an important part of the process.
When it comes to experimenting with play, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because you could be documenting something of cultural significance or architectural significance. So there's an element of respect that has to be had when you're interacting with it. But when you have the 3D model, which is something that you could edit, you consider it something that's, malleable, it opens so many doors into how we see and interpret these physical objects. I think we should be doing more of that because it opposes the fact that heritage should be something static, but rather something that could be recreated and reproduced in different scales or colors or textures. So you're claiming a new kind of ownership on basically these solid physical objects, that you it's hard to interact with. You're basically in that interacting with it by being inside of the space or just looking at the object. But when you have a digital model, it just opens all of these different chances for you to see it in a different way. But also try and maintain also an element of respect and admiration for the thing that you're documenting.
You touched on this a bit when you were talking about the sense of urgency when you came back to Cairo to document things because of the really unprecedented urban development which is happening in the city at the moment. It's inevitable that cities kind of develop. I think what you're seeing in Cairo is, it's not very responsive to community need. It's not, I guess, responsible development in some ways. But I also want to ask about when you're creating an archive, you are capturing a singular moment in time. And I just want to push you a bit more on, do you think that you have a responsibility as an archiver to question why it is this specific moment in time that you're capturing? And also perhaps to communicate that to your audiences, like to tell them that, this is this specific moment. It may not look like this anymore. It didn't look like this in the past because, cultural heritage changes. And particularly in a city like Cairo, where stuff is changing so rapidly.
100%. I think it depends also on how you intend on capturing something, because yes, you are capturing a singular moment in time, but it's how you put it into context, that it's how you relay this information. And I always think of some photogrammetry projects and initiatives happening now or from the past few years, and seeing how they captured these moments or what was their purpose in archiving. So you have this spectrum of capturing a singular moment, and there's also using photogrammetry to create a sense of urgency because something might be demolished or something might not be there anymore. There's a project from 2015, 16, I think, called Project Mosul. It aimed to preserve what remained of Iraq's monuments after ISIS destroyed most of it. And that I would place that on the side of the spectrum where there is a huge sense of urgency, and that is the main drive, and not necessarily capturing a single moment in time, but just preserving something for eternity, just in case it might get destroyed. Another one, for example, that is happening now is Limbo Accra, and they use photogrammetry to create a digital repository of incomplete buildings or projects from Africa and around the world, and seeing how we can insert ourselves as architects and designers to think about adaptation and reusing these spaces while also learning about the times in which these buildings were built, because they're looking maybe at a certain moment in the 20th century where there was a lot of it was like a movement for African modernism and decolonization. As a result of that, a lot of brutalist buildings were constructed, but not many of them were completed. It's a great topic that they're looking into. It's always important to think about these things if we're going to capture or document or preserve. And I think that's what Mugassam is right now. It's kind of a space in the middle that's showing that photogrammetry can intersect with so many different stories and narratives, but on different scales. So I'm looking at something that like is a one-to-one scale of chairs or doors or certain objects, but then I'm also looking at places, for example, in the Mamluk cemeteries in Cairo, which parts of it were demolished. It speaks volumes to think about the value of the 3D model, having this 3D model of something that does not exist anymore. So it's basically a continuation of that certain typology, for example.
Karim is not just driven by urban change. Like many young people around the world, he's also very concerned about climate change. the effects of climate change in Egypt are already considerable and really tangible, with unbearable temperatures, changes to sea levels, and unpredictable rainfall.
For me, Mugassam didn't really start in, 2 years ago, in 22. It was just more of a culmination of like all my interests and all the things that I researched in my final year. Somehow it also relates to my starting point in that project, which was climate change, and how the Nile Delta is going to be seriously affected. It's being affected now, but even more so in the future. So I don't know, I think it just stemmed from like a sense of, this existential fear, but at the same time, we're not trying to reverse climate change, but I think we should just adapt to it because it's inevitable, So I've kind of accepted the fact that there are so many things that will, be demolished or, might not be there anymore. Even, these mundane objects that you mentioned in the outline, these mundane objects are actually the most temporary of all the things that I scan, because I can take a mental note of something that I want to go back to and scan. That's it's movable, like a chair or, just something super random. Even like the bark of a tree. I take a mental note to go back, and then, a few days later I go back and, they cut down the tree, or, the chair is not there anymore. So you feel a sense of, defeat, because you wanted to scan something or just document its really interesting aesthetic or the color, and it's not there anymore. So that's why I also pay attention to these everyday objects as well. So there's a lot that goes back to the bigger picture of preservation, but I think also just enjoying these surroundings. And, I would love to, you could create these alternate environments, digitally, that could be a collection of, a chair from this area and a facade from another area. And it just really, I would hope, like, kind of in a good way, crossing the line when it comes to play.
In museum spaces, there definitely is kind of this conversation about 3D scanning cultural heritage as a way of democratizing access to heritage. But I think this kind of ignores the fact that, these are museums which are built on colonial collections. They still are very much like within this colonial framework. And they invite an organization like Factum Arte, for example, in. They then scan the work, and the museum continues to hold ownership of this object because they own the files of the 3D scan. And like, even if we're talking about, digital restitution, some museums have suggested that maybe 3D scanning is a way of them continuing to hold the original item, but maybe the source communities can have a 3D scan of it. The project Luti, they came into the British Museum and did some 3D scanning of the Rosetta Stone in response to this, and as a way to kind of push back against it. What's your opinion on this?
Well, I agree with you in the sense that this act of digital restitution is a way for these museums or institutions that are built on colonial histories and pasts. It's a way for them to kind of prolong the fact that they will keep holding on to these physical objects. So, for example, with the British Museum, they have a huge digital library of 3D models of artifacts that they have in their collections, including the Egyptian collection. As much as it is, in a way, informative, and you can access these 3D models for academic purposes or, for learning and so on, they're still owned by the British Museum, and the physical objects are still there. So I think it could be a way for these institutions to compromise or find some kind of like settlement in the middle, where you could have access to these models for free, but you're still not able to see the original object in its original place. I think what, for example, the Luti project was a really interesting pushback on that. They scanned the Rosetta Stone and then they used AR to put the Rosetta Stone back in its original place in Domiot in Egypt. I thought it was super interesting because you're using some kind of digital repatriation, but I think it deviates a bit from the original cause of repatriating the original objects. I don't know. It's a bit of a strange topic to talk about because the thing is with digital models, we talked about how easy it is to edit and kind of change the scale and texture. So if you're downloading the 3D model, it's hard to grasp the actual scale of it. And maybe there is some information that is, you know, carved on the artifact or a part of it, which could be edited before even sharing the model online. So there's a bit of a cryptic meaning behind this digital restitution.
I was looking at your Instagram earlier, and I think you put up some new posts since the last time I looked, and you had Lost and Scanned, a video piece, which includes some items from the British Museum. And I noticed at the bottom that you had credited the British Museum Digital Library Egyptian collection. Did you credit them because you have to, or is your crediting them in some ways a comment on the facts that you have to credit them because they own it?
The licensing rules basically state if I'm using these models for something commercial or something that I'd be sharing publicly, then I would have to credit the British Museum. And I think it's really ironic, you know, because in the end, you know, they still own these models. It's a bit of a tricky situation with ownership. So so yeah, that was the reason. It was the licensing rules basically. And so yeah, I think it's a bit funny because you're using these 3D models to show something or talk about digital repatriation, but you're using these same models. And actually, so after looking at after seeing the Luti project, I was also a bit confused because you're doing the, let's say, quote unquote, illegal act of scanning something, which I don't think it is. Actually, looking at the rules of the British Museum, you're actually allowed to scan them, but the Rosetta Stone is actually publicly accessible. So I think it creates this confusion on who actually owns these digital objects.
An idea that formed while we were researching this episode was that in some ways, 3D scans are almost like future hauntings. Like ghosts, they're formless and spectral glimpses of a past which, in many cases, no longer exists. We wanted to ask Kareem his opinion about this, especially given that one of his pieces has a bit of a haunted story behind it. I'm going to read the text for it now. Reminiscent of a forgotten tourism renaissance, this brutalist landmark currently symbolises a never-ending cycle of land disputes between the private sector and the government. The hotel was built in the early 1980s by two brothers who entered the tourism industry and owned multiple resorts across the country. From 1987 onwards, the Sieg family faced burdening financial debts that resulted in huge legal battles with the government in 2010 and ended in seizing assets, vandalising the hotel, looting, and a fire. Today, the hotel stands as a shadow of its past, a place known for crime and horror stories.
Let's say, for example, the Sieg Hotel gets demolished. There is something in having the 3D model as a way to extend the narrative of what used to be there. So that the element of haunting, you know, could be something quite interesting because like going back to the idea of, you know, editing a 3D model or creating a whole other environment around that object, is you can also kind of recreate what the building was, you know, or the context around it. So yeah, if that answers your question, but there's also something about other people's narratives as well. And you know, I'm with Mugassam, I'm always, you know, the conversations that I'm having with a lot of people is to try and have other people use photogrammetry as well and contribute their own scans, because it then becomes not just an archive, but kind of a collection of memories or a collection of moments that have been created into 3D models where you can kind of insert yourself in this memory every now and then.
I think I'd propose this as kind of a bit of a devil's advocate question when we were talking before. Obviously, your work is all about archiving. It's all about cultural heritage preservation. And that is the dominant narrative within the space of cultural heritage. You know, some cultures like the Native Americans, they believe that intangible heritage and cultural heritage should be allowed to decay in a respectful way. And I kind of just wanted to hear your perspective on decay, and if there wasn't so much like urban change in Cairo, would you still be doing this project, or would you kind of be more happy with letting time move on and your subjects being forgotten?
This is something that I actually explored or kind of ended my final year project on. And that was once you've documented something, or once you've scanned it, or, you know, did as much research and information on it, is it acceptable to just let the monument or whatever you're documenting decay? And because, you know, like my research was based in the Nile Delta, and I was looking into the kind of the imminent societal erasure of the Nile Delta, and, you know, bits and pieces of Alexandria because of sea level rise. And like, you know, the idea with sea level rise, of course, will damage so many things in the built environment, but at the same time, it's going to destroy the soil itself of the Nile Delta, because it's going to increase in salinity. And all of these monuments that are in the Nile Delta that are basically like so intertwined with the land itself is also under threat. And that was the main focus of my research. And so the idea was to create some kind of like transitory conservation effort, or like a pan delta conservation effort, where we would create the temporary architecture around these excavations and monuments and use that as an envelope for the local communities to be encouraged to excavate and know more about the history of the village or the town that they're in. And, you know, once you've documented all of this, and, you know, you start seeing in maybe 50 or 100 years where, you know, the sea level rise might reach 50 centimeters and it's just going to be, you know, in huge patches of the delta, is that besides the human migration, we have to ask ourselves whether we should let these monuments decay where they are, because they were meant to belong in that specific spot for millennia, or until it kind of just disappears? Or would you be taking it out of its context and putting it in museums and basically just moving it from its original place? So I kind of ended on this rhetorical question. So to this day, I still don't have an answer for it, but there is an element of respect for these monuments, and in a way we should let them decay, but we have to at least document it as much as we can. And, you know, this is the beauty of photogrammetry as well, is that even if the object is not there, you still have the details of it and the textures. You're able to learn so much from that intangible object. So maybe it is a good thing to let things decay. And, you know, we kind of romanticize preservation so much. Maybe it's also something that's quite instilled in our brains to just constantly preserve something. But there's also a beauty in letting things go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Voicing Art. If you enjoyed listening, then please like and subscribe. And you can follow us on Instagram at Voicing Art. Voicing Art is produced by Emily Primer-Pike and Tilda Coughlin. And our theme music is by Carol O'Hare. You can find her on SoundCloud and Instagram at Carol O'Hare.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.